Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. This is Bronco Tuesday, where we discuss the Olympic sports at Boise State. Now here are Paul J. Schneider, Chris Walton, and the voice of the Broncos, Bob Beeler, on 670 KBOI.
Well, time of the morning, it's 8:38. Joining us in studio this morning, Brad LaRondo. Talking a little bit about the annual signing day show at Big Al's coming up Wednesday, February 7th, a week from tomorrow. And it's going to be quite a deal.
Yeah, so signing day, it always is that first Wednesday in February, which this year, you know, kind of coincides with being a little later. So it's February 7th. So we got a week from tomorrow at Big Al's. You know, we want to get out there in kind of the west end of town. And we know that there's a large population base, a lot of Broncos out there. About 300 seats available at Big Al's. We're selling tickets for $10. So it'll be an entertaining night with all the coaches. Yep. We're going to have video highlights of all the signees. You know, there were 20 of them in December. So it kind of changed things with that early signing period. But still about four that we're looking to sign here over in the next week. So a little bit of, you know, kind of intrigue out there on who some of those new signees could be. But really a chance to kind of mingle with the coaches, find out more about this, and just be around some Broncos and talk a little football in the midst of what's turned out to be pretty good basketball season right now, too. So
our show's going to be out there at the same time. People can hear it right here on 670 KBOI. 5 to 7 is the time. And I just think it's fascinating, and we'll be interested to talk to the coaches about what they thought of the early signing day. I mean, if you look at it from our perspective, from Boise State's perspective, it seems like they got everybody they wanted early and now are working on some key people late.
Well, I think if you look at it, when you can sign 20 guys in the early signing period, you have to think that's fairly successful because you don't have to re-recruit those guys over the course of the next, you know, 6 weeks after the holidays and once you get into eval period of January. So you know those guys are locked up, and now you can focus on, okay, what are the needs, you know, left? Is it another O-lineman, a D-lineman? Do you need a tight end? Obviously quarterback, a big one for Boise State. And so you look at those things, and you're like, okay, how do we go get those positions that we need to fill out to round out your class of 24, 25, whatever your numbers are? So when you can do that, you feel good about it. You know, some teams are scrambling right now to kind of figure out where they go. So for the signing period early-wise for Boise State, really worked out well this year. You know, it's a grind. We've talked about that before, that month of December. But now I think it's one of those where you can go out, you can not only recruit for 2018, but you start looking ahead to 2019, visiting with coaches when you're on the road in January and kind of setting the tone for that. So always something to be done recruiting-wise. But I do think next Wednesday will be still a celebratory time. A chance to reflect on who was signed in December, the new guys in this late signing period, and then kind of be able to then put past the recruiting and move into spring ball and some of the things going on that way.
Plus a chance to put faces, body types, and moves on the names that you've heard earlier.
Yeah, you get to see the highlights on the big screen and, you know, watch what the running backs do or the wide receivers. You know, we signed a number of wide receivers in that early signing period. So a chance to see how are they going to mix with potential other signees, watch the video clips of them. And we really think it's just a chance for our fans to get together and talk about football, hear about the new ones coming in. And we hope to fill up the whole lower level there at Big Al's. Like I said, it's $10 tickets. You can get them at our athletic ticket office. You can get them online. But really just a chance to wear your blue and orange and kind of help celebrate what was a championship season, and then look ahead, you know, to 2018, because season ticket renewals are out right now. You know, a lot of people that are season ticket holders have got those in the mail. So you hope that they're going to be sending those back in. Season tickets are on sale for anybody new that wants them. And if you look at this schedule, really an exciting home schedule with having BYU, Fresno State, San Diego State, UConn is coming in, which, you know, may not be okay, but they haven't ever been here before. They're an American Athletic Conference team. We've seen teams come out of nowhere from one year to the next. And then you've got Colorado State and Utah State, which are key division games. So we really feel like that home schedule, you know, starting now, is something that we really want to promote to fans, get them talking about it, and get them excited about 2018 Bronco football.
The bowl game for Boise State and the timing of that bowl game this year kind of ended up being a bonus for BSU with the early signing period.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of those where you can play a bowl game on the first weekend. You know, obviously you gotta find time to recruit, you gotta find time to game plan, all that. But when you condense that window down, it allows you not only to play your bowl game and then focus on the signing day 4 or 5 days later, but it allows you to hopefully get a win, which Boise State, which we did this year, in beating Oregon, which was a West Coast team that, you know, is constantly in the news recruiting wise. So that obviously was a huge lift for us on a December 16th when you know you've got signing day 4 days later. And that helped, you know, we certainly know that that helped in some of these recruits' minds as they made a decision on, okay, I want to confirm going to Boise State and I do want to sign, you know, right now. That's the place I want to be. So that certainly played into things very well for us to win a conference championship the first week into December, win a bowl game against Oregon the third week into December, and then 4 days later, you know, sign 20 players. That was really, really a big month for us.
KBOI News Time, 844. We're talking with Brad Lorando of BSU.
Now, back to Bronco Tuesday on 670 KBOI.
All right, it's a Bronco Tuesday. We're talking with Brad Lorando of Boise State.
And, Brad, we've got some big basketball coming up. Coach Rice with another challenge. UNLV, a great opponent coming in on Saturday. They've got some NBA players on that team, especially inside. Boise State beat him down at Las Vegas to start the conference season. But he's challenged he will ride a horse across campus if we can get a sellout.
Yeah, crazy Leon Rice, huh? He's always up to something.
Is he insured? Do you have him well insured?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, the way he was putting his foot in that stirrup yesterday on the video, he's got to be a little careful there. But,
yeah.
You know, what's great about Leon is he is willing to do things like that. He's into it with the fans, you know, whether it's, you know, kind of one of those goofy stunts or, you know, people sometimes get into those things. I think what it is it's bringing some recognition to the men's basketball team and the basketball program. And, you know, as you mentioned, Bob, you know, UNLV, I mean, this was a team that when you look at them, you know, physically watch them, you know, like, wow, those there's got some fellas out there. Certainly had a great non-conference season, and you know that after getting beat at home by Boise State, they're gonna watch that tape back. They're gonna look at some things that they were able to do in that game. We expect a tremendous game in a tremendous environment. 9,500 tickets out as of right now, so they are going fast. If you want to get some pairs together, there's a few scattered throughout the arena, but mostly up on the balcony. But the whole thing is how do we get 12,000 in there and create the best environment that we possibly can for a UNLV game where they're coming into town, and for Boise State, every game becomes ultra critical. Not only as you kind of chase for a conference potential regular season championship and seeding, but also what you look at postseason play, because you're building your resume every single game on potentially getting to the NCAA tournament and not leaving it in the hands of just having to win the conference tournament.
And also think that one of the records that this team could be shooting for, you hear like we're off to the best start since I think it was 88-89 and off to the best start in the league since 98-99. But there's 1 year back in the, I think it's in the 80s, that the team went undefeated at home. And I think that would be a tremendous record to shoot for, to go undefeated at home. There's four home games left and do something that's only been done once in school history.
I mean, think about it. In school history, one time that a team's gone undefeated, and it's been almost 20 years since that. So this team has an opportunity to do something special. I think the fans of Boise have really started gravitating to how fun this team is, how hard they work on the court. You know, Bob and I were talking about this. This team is a little bit different than others. They can get very streaky and score a lot of points. We've seen that in bunches with the way they shoot the three, but they're just so, you know, the way they rotate and you know, play hard and hustle for the ball and rebound and D teams up. I mean, this is the number one defensive team in the Mountain West going against the number one offensive team, which is UNLV. And so it's a contrast of some things, and which one is going to come out the victor, and that's where home court advantage becomes so critical on what you're looking to do. And so I think that the rest of the way, when you talk UNLV, you talk a game against Nevada on Valentine's night, which will be a big one, and I think a lot of people are, hey, it's a 9 o'clock game, so we'll go grab a little bit of dinner beforehand, take my sweetie out for dinner, whatever, and then come to the basketball arena, but that's going to be a big one. And then you've got Wyoming still to come in here, which obviously is an overtime loss on the road, so you get a chance at seeing Wyoming again, and then Air Force. So four chances left to watch these guys. I think you got to take every opportunity to do that, just for the team, but also for a guy like Chandler Hutchison. I mean, players like that, you know, they're special. They come along every now and then, but not all the time. And a chance to see him in person, you really got about four more chances to do that.
And a lot of people, maybe when they watched James Webb a couple seasons ago, didn't realize they were looking at an NBA team. He made his debut the other night as a backup, came in, played a few minutes for the Brooklyn Nets, and hopefully he can stay with them the rest of the season.
No question. And hopefully you see, you know, Webb up there for a while. You see Chandler getting a chance at that. You know, Chandler tested the waters last year, was able to use that new NCAA, NBA rule where you can kind of go out but don't sign with an agent. Got an idea of what he needed to do better. Worked his tail off during the summer and the off season, and you can see he's improved on those. And throughout the course of this season, when you're one of, you know, kind of throughout the season, the only guy averaging 28-3, I think he's fallen below 8 rebounds, you know, right now. But he's basically – a 20-point, 8-rebound, 3-assist guy out there, you know, that's a very special category, and I think you're going to be able to see Chandler and a Webb, and hopefully that, you know, that goes to show where Boise State is now on the basketball map and positioning itself.
One other guy has done that. Who is it?
It was 18. The numbers were 19, 8, and 3, and there were 14 people, and there was pretty much a who's who. Jamal Mashburn was on the list. Tim Duncan was on the list.
They did it for a whole season.
Ben Simmons
did it for a whole season last season.
There were 14 players. 7 or 8 of them were people you would know from the NBA.
Yeah, so Chandler's got a chance there.
You know? I'm thinking there was one other Mountain West player in history.
Oh, Mountain West.
Yeah. And there's been some good ones come through the Mountain West. But, yeah, I mean, Chandler's up there and in some categories not only for Boise State, but you're talking about elite, you know, play around the nation. And I think, you know, as fans of Boise State and as a community that supports the Broncos, you know, I mean, that's a cool thing to be a part of and to see that. And hopefully that, you know, we'll see 10,000 to 12,000 people at all these remaining 4 home games and help push this team into a position to have a great postseason run as well.
Brad Lorando is our guest. It's 8:51.
Now, back to Bronco Tuesday on 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back on a Bronco Tuesday with Brad Lorando. Got the NCAA first and second round coming in.
Yeah, that's an exciting time. You kind of got a little bit of basketball madness going with the way the men's team is playing. The women's team is certainly right there in the hunt of things in the Mountain West as well. They go on the road this weekend to UNLV, and then you've got the NCAA first and second round coming in mid-March, which a lot of preparations going into that. Bob Carney, who's our associate athletic director for facilities and game management, is kind of running that tournament. Joe Nickel, who you guys know well, on the media side of things, and that is a large project, but something that is tremendous amount of exposure for Boise State University, in addition to being a kind of a feather in the cap as it relates to the NCAA and being able to host something like that. And our fans here in Boise, I mean, they absolutely love that thing. I mean, it's sold out. You know, there's still a chance that once teams are announced, you can get some tickets here and there, depending on how far somebody's coming or if they sell all their
If
you're clever and find a way, yeah. So it's one of those where you're going to have, you know, 11,500 people, you know, standing room only in that arena for 8 hours on Thursday, and then a couple hours there, 4 hours on Saturday. So a lot of fun that those 2 days.
How has it changed? I mean, I know Boise's hosted multiple years, you know, dating back a while.
Yeah.
How has it changed being a host?
Well, I think you look at it, and there's just so many different, I don't know if you call them regulations or standardizing that the NCAA does. You know, back in the first few times that we hosted it, you know, you had your Boise State floor down, so you're obviously getting a lot of that logo exposure and all that. Now they bring in the same floor for every site, so it looks very similar, the same, you know, kind of curtain and pipe and draping, and just the show that they run is a little
more.
We'll
be blue and orange, I understand.
That's what I heard, yeah, so that'll be good.
So will San Diego.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm sure San Diego's going, wait a second here, what's going on? But very standardized in how they do it so that every place has that neutral site feel. There's a lot more of kind of the run of show inside the games and what you do on the replay boards, recognition of other NCAA things. It's a little more elaborate, a little more time consuming that the host institution has to do. So it's very much a full blown production that they bring in, and just so many details on what you have to do to get it set up, moving forward, you got 8 teams coming in. You got all kinds of media. You've got officials. You got NCAA reps. So, I mean, you know, you've got so many hotels. You got buses. You got schedules. You got practices. I mean, it is a lot of moving parts to put something like that on, no question.
Got the coaches show coming up Thursday night, 6:00, down at the Stonehouse, which is the building right next to the Ram in downtown Boise, kind of kitty corner from Albertson Stadium. And we have both coaches there, Coach Presnell and Coach Rice. There'll be a player from each team and buffet dinner. So come on down.
6:00
on Thursday.
6:00 on Thursday
night.
So come on down to that. Meet Coach Rice, Coach Presnell. I mean, right now, just it's one of those where you just feel kind of this buzz in the air with everything. You know, basketball teams doing well. Men's team 18-4. I mean, I think we were looking at it. You combine an 11-3 football record with 18-4 in men's basketball, and there aren't too many teams in the country, you know, maybe a handful, half dozen.
Oklahoma is about one of them. I can think of them. Might be close.
Oklahoma, Michigan State, Auburn. You're talking about the elite of the elite that Boise State is a part of when you look at kind of the combined fall into winter. So really an exciting time, you know, one where we hope that all of our fans and donors and those who love Bronco Nation can get out, watch this team Saturday against UNLV, come on out to Big Al's next week for the signing day. Football's locking up that class and then moving into things as the spring progresses.
Bradley, thanks for your time today, and exciting times ahead at Boise State.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Bobby. It's 8:56. Idaho Talks Live coming up after a news break at the top of the hour.
If you're talking about it...
They don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
Top of the morning, it's 9:07. Thanks to Brad Lorando from Boise State for gracing us with his presence this morning. Boy, a lot of exciting stuff coming up out of BSU.
Yeah, I always enjoy the signing day because they show highlights of the way these guys played once in a while, junior college, but usually in high school.
Right.
And then you kind of watch and you try to keep in mind and figure out who do you think is going to have a lot of playing time as a freshman, sophomore, and who's going to be successful. And later you find out you were wrong, but still.
Oh, man. It's going to be different this year, though, with the 20 signed already. You know, usually you get 20 signed on the 7th.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're going, who are they? Who are they? But now we know all but, I was going to say all but four, but we know who the quarterback is.
Mm-hmm.
So all but about three. But we get a chance to check them out.
Yeah, still, they might... They might have those...
and they might have some surprises.
Still, they might have some of those guys there.
Yeah.
That night.
A 32-year-old man. This blows my mind.
Yeah.
You think if you're in ill health, there's no better place to be than a hospital, right?
Well, yes and no.
No, in this case. 32-year-old man... died in a freak accident in India. How, you might ask?
How?
He was sucked into an MRI machine on Saturday night. What'd you do Saturday night? Well, Rajesh Maru.
How was your weekend? Well, better than this guy.
Listen to this. This is stuff you don't even think about.
Right.
Rajesh Maru carried an oxygen container into a room at Nair Hospital in Mumbai with an active MRI scanner. In other words, the MRI machine was on.
Yeah.
And it's magnetic forces.
Right. They don't...
They have huge magnets. They
don't treat you well if you have metal somewhere on your body.
Yeah. It's magnetic forces dragged him into the machine. Well, you're going, well, what killed him, though? It doesn't have teeth, right? That's when, talk about unlucky, that's when the oxygen cylinder broke, emitting fatal concentrations of liquid oxygen that Maru inhaled.
Wow.
This in The Guardian, the English newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Maru's uncle said a hospital employee had allowed his nephew into the MRI room.
Ill-advisedly?
And illegally. The ward boy, who was supposed to prevent these kinds of accidents, told my family members to go inside when the machine was on. We're shocked and devastated, the uncle said. Well, yeah.
Yeah, you would.
The guy got sucked into an MRI machine. In a statement released yesterday, a Mumbai police spokesman announced two hospital employees had been arrested for negligence. We have arrested a doctor and another junior staff member. That would be the guy that let him in.
Mm-hmm.
Under Section 304 of the Indian Penal Code for causing a death due to negligence.
Right. I was watching a show just the other night, and I know it's just a TV show. But on the medical shows, they try to get as much right as they possibly can.
Sure.
And somebody had ordered, a new doctor had ordered an MRI. What it was is there was somebody that was one of the hospital administrators that was trying to get them to spend more money per patient. In other words, if they need a couple of tests, have them take 10. you know, that we then we can bill their insurance more. It was stuff like that.
Yeah.
And this this guy, she basically ordered one of the doctors to give this guy an MRI so they could, you know, add that to the bill. And it was stopped just before they turned on the machine because another doctor came in, and apparently the guy had some sort of implant in his body somewhere that was metal that probably would have just come right out
torn
of his body.
Torn his guts out.
Well, yeah, something like that. Or whatever part of the body it was
These,
in.
You can turn down those tests.
Mm-hmm.
But most people don't.
Well, most people don't because you trust the doctor.
Exactly.
Because you didn't go to medical school.
Exactly. Well, we're going to do an MRI.
So who has the upper hand here? That would be, you know, the people who did.
See, and that's the thing where if they know you have insurance and they know your insurance is going to cover it, MRI machines cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Boom. However, with any luck, you have people who, you know, have integrity and are honest.
Yeah,
and
most are.
And you don't have somebody who's just trying to run up your bill.
Yeah, most are. Now, we've both had MRIs.
We have, yes.
What did they tell you after yours?
After what now?
After your MRI, what you just told me. It'll get better.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, and that's what happened to me. Yeah, I had this happened when I was in my 20s. One of my legs basically fell asleep like they do, you know, except that from the knee down, it didn't wake up for a month. And I just couldn't get it.
I have never heard of it.
Yeah, and neither had any of the doctors I went to. And they did all kinds of tests and couldn't figure out what it was. And they kept saying maybe it's a pinched nerve of some kind.
Which they finally decided
that's probably what it was, but they really couldn't figure it out. But I had a whole bunch of tests run. And this is before I had health insurance, so this ended up costing me a bundle.
Sweet.
But they also had me take do an MRI. And nobody was saying, like, okay, we're going to have an MRI, and those cost $1,500. They just gave it to me at the time. It basically, you know, I was in that machine and, you know, it's thrum, 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 you know.
Yep.
And what they found was, are you ready for this? Inconclusive. And that cost me $1,500.
To find out?
That it was inconclusive. Nothing. Yes, to find out nothing. And then eventually they said, well, you know, we're pretty sure it'll get better. And it did. However, it was
That's good news.
It was pretty well, yeah, and I did want to know just in case it wasn't going to get better, but it turned out to be the same result had I just not gone to the doctor at all. Now, to be fair, a lot of things don't turn out that way. Like, well, I've got this thing growing on my neck.
Yeah, go to the doctor.
Yeah, it's about 10 times as big as it was yesterday. I'm going to wait till tomorrow and see what happens.
KBOI News Time.
You probably shouldn't. That's my point.
9:15.
You're listening to Idaho Talks Live with Paul, Jay, and Chris. Rush Limbaugh comes up at 10 on 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back. It's 9:19.
We have the State of the Union address tonight.
And you can hear it live right here.
And it is technically President Trump's first State of the Union address because when you are brand new, you know, when you're just have been president a couple of weeks, they don't call that the State of the Union. That's more of your introductory speech. Or I can't remember exactly what the name is, but they call it something besides State of the Union. So this will be the officially.
It's really funny. When I was in grade school.
One. Yeah.
I used to think the State of the Union address was where the president got up and talked about, like,
one state,
Illinois.
One state out of the union.
State of the Union tonight is Illinois.
This is kind of interesting. A letter to the editor published in the Idaho Falls Post Register on January 21st has been shared nearly 120,000 times on Facebook. As of 5 p.m. yesterday afternoon, and, you know, obviously probably more now.
It's pretty good for Idaho Falls.
Yeah,
now.
Reaching far past the borders of Idaho. The letter written by, and I guess it's S-A-T-H-E, I want to say Jim Saith, maybe, or Sathe. Anyway, Jim Saith of Idaho Falls, I'll call him that, was a response to two previous letters published in the Post Register and detailed why Saith felt he couldn't support President Donald Trump. So apparently it's being sent around by people who feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
The letter has been shared by people in California, West Virginia, Texas, Hawaii, Washington State, and Saith said he's gotten responses from people in Sweden, Germany, Mexico, Canada, and England.
Darn.
Because, you know, that's how the internet works.
Mm-hmm.
The viral response to the letter showcases the nation's political divide, he says, in the lead up to the State of the Union address tonight. Ron Chick, a retired teacher in California, said he feels betrayed by the Republican Party. He voted for the president in the election and said he has felt miserable ever since. Chick was struck by the last line in Saith's letter that said to support Trump would be casting aside conscience, morality, decency, and common sense. This is exactly where I've been, Chick said. How do you support a totally immoral man? Saith has gotten about 1,000 messages and 200 new friend requests since he first posted the letter on the day it printed in the paper. Most of the messages have been positive, with only a few negative pushbacks, Saith said.
Mm-hmm.
Saith said he wrote the letter to voice his perspective and how he feels about Trump, not to persuade anyone. I do not feel obligated.
So he was venting.
Yeah, basically venting, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do not feel obligated to, and he voted for him. So, you know, there's that. I do not feel obligated to persuade others to my point of view. It is the responsibility of every person to embrace the reality of human existence and determine what kind of human being they want to be, Saith said, and posted that also on his Facebook page. In the letter, Saith said he can't support Trump because the president has broken several of the Ten Commandments, denigrates women, supports white supremacists, and makes racist comments. Although Saith said he isn't a religious person himself, he likes to use the Ten Commandments as a reference. I was seeing a lot of religious support for President Trump, which mystifies me, so I wanted to put that component in there, Saith said. Saith is a registered Democrat and voted for Hillary. Okay, now this guy voted. It was the Chick guy, Ron Chick, who voted for Trump. But Saith voted for Hillary Clinton in the last presidential election. He remembers the day he became a Democrat when Ronald Reagan fired the air traffic controllers. You remember that?
Yep.
Before that, he was a Republican. Now, that's basically all they've got to say about this particular letter. But I have heard from other people on Twitter, especially, who say that they don't understand why, for instance, the group known as evangelicals and people like that, why they support Trump.
That kind of mystifies me.
And the deal is, it doesn't mystify me that much, because a couple of their big issues are they don't support homosexuals or gay marriage. And for the most part, conservatives don't. I mean, and there are different kinds of conservatives, but for the most part, conservatives don't. And they also don't support abortion. And so it would seem sometimes that regardless of what you do in your extracurricular activities or what you say, as long as those are your core beliefs or at least your core politics, that you will get the support of a lot of people for whom those things are very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like morally the lines of what you can get away with, if you want to put it like that.
Yeah.
Have really moved over the last 3-4 elections.
Well, possibly. But you remember before Reagan was elected?
I mean, it used to be when you were divorced.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
No shot.
Reagan had been divorced. He'd been married to Jane Wyman,
mm-hmm.
you know, who was a big movie star, and they got divorced. This has been years before, and he'd married Nancy Davis, another movie actress, anyway.
And had been married to her forever.
Yeah. And he was the very first president who had ever been divorced. And mm-hmm. people thought, wow, I mean, is he even going to...
Hey, he hasn't got a chance.
Is he even going to win? Has he got a chance? Then, of course, he won the landslide in 1980. And I don't know. I'm not entirely sure where the line is drawn now. Because there are many people that a lot of things come out about Trump. And some of them may be true and some of them may be, you know, false. I don't know. I haven't been spending time with him.
True.
But some of the things that are, you know, that have been alleged to be true, if they are true, it would probably be surprising to a lot of people that, there aren't more supporters of his dropping off the bandwagon.
Yeah.
But like, for instance, I said about the evangelicals.
They call it the oh well effect.
The evangelicals, if you subscribe to a certain number of the Christian beliefs, then, you know, basically one thing Christians do is forgive you.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
True. That's a big basis of religion.
Yeah, and as long as you push kind of what they're into, they will forgive you. It's 9:26. We'll be back.
Remember, you are listening to Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
Your politics, I think, are based on what is important to you.
True.
You know, and like I said, people talk about, well, how can evangelicals be in favor of Trump? And I said, well, okay, they might think Trump is impolite or Trump, you know, does a bunch of things they don't care for. But on the other hand, they're looking for certain things that he stands for that they also stand for. And so they will vote for him over someone who is more liberal.
Who
might be considerably more polite, I don't know.
Yeah, who might be more polite but not believe in the same things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, and real quick here, Mark of Meridian wrote in, if you sell your soul so your 401k gets bigger, what does that make you? And I'm going to say rich.
Rich.
Well, rich and without a soul. But again, if that's your main reason to vote for somebody, if you say, well, okay, I'm going to vote for the politician that wants to get rid of as many limits to business, I guess, or you know, as many things that'll stand in the way of good business as possible, then that is who I'll vote for because I want the stock market to go up, something of that nature.
Is that a good reason to vote, though?
It's your reason.
Yeah. And
you know, whatever is your reason.
And it helps you.
It's like I said, there are some people who vote for the person they'd like to have a beer with. Is that a good reason to vote for somebody?
Yeah, probably not. Let's go to John of Meridian. John.
Good morning.
Morning. Hi, John.
Hey, you know, what is the evangelical vote? It shouldn't be voting for Trump. Who should an evangelical be voting for?
That's a damn good question.
Well, and that's what the question is. I mean, you know,
then we have Hillary Clinton to choose from. Why is this person consider that maybe Hillary Clinton is a better choice for an evangelical, and why is that? It makes no sense to me. I know exactly why I voted for Donald Trump. People are people. We all have faults.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump has his faults, and I'm willing to live with his faults far more easier than I'm willing to live with Hillary Clinton's fault. And that's basically why I voted for him.
When you vote for a president, what are the two or three most important things to you?
Believe it or not, it's a positive attitude and a realistic attitude about life. We need to live. We need to have money. We need to make a living. We need to have, our people's rights stood up for. One of the things, but not exclusive to abortion, unborn children.
Mm-hmm.
Someone needs to defend their right to life, and I'm going to do it. And I'm going to find somebody. I hope I find somebody that can do it. And Donald Trump actually has been the best choice for that. If he wants a choice about evangelicals choosing Trump, there it is. He's been the most pro-choice, pro-life.
Okay. There you go. I mean, right there, that's an important point for you. And so regardless of how much you might hear about Trump that's on the negative side, unless he's going to break one of your core beliefs, then you're probably still fine with it.
Well, there's going to be a core belief broken somewhere, I'm sure. But they've been throwing that in the evangelicals' faces for years. Oh, yeah, you can't even get a pro-life person that you say you pretend to believe in. Well, we don't pretend to believe in it. We do. We're just doing the best we can with what we got to work with. And this time we just, you know, we hit the jackpot with Donald Trump. I'll tell you when I stopped.
The sentence with what we got to work with, I think that does determine it because – It comes down to two choices, and that's what you got to work with. So you have to take the one that you feel is best.
Right. I will tell you where I'll be done with Donald Trump. I will be done with Donald Trump the day he actually rapes Kathleen Willey. I'll be done with him.
Okay. So barring that...
why was Bill Clinton's improprieties passed over, and now we're using
Well, probably for the same reasons. There were people whose core beliefs didn't let them vote for the alternative.
Well, I think his was covered up by our government. That's another thing we voted for Donald Trump about. We want this unmasking of our civil rights to be exposed for what it is. This memo being released to the public, that's going to be the nail in the coffin for the Democrats in 2000.
You know, and I don't think there was a lot that was covered up about Bill Clinton by the government. I mean, somebody might have tried. But if you remember the 1996 election with Bill Clinton and Bob Dole, I mean, was there anybody that didn't know that Clinton was a dog at that point?
Well, he wasn't allowed. We weren't allowed here. He wasn't out there as a rapist, which is exactly what he was. And Hillary Clinton covered it up. That makes her an accessory to that. So to this day, they're both guilty of rape and accessory to rape. To this day, I don't think the statute of limitation is off of that.
All right.
Good stuff. Thanks, John.
Let me go ahead and for the other side. And Trump is a dog too. Now, when I say dog, you know, I kind of mean, for want of a better term, horn dog.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gotcha. All right. Let's go to Rich. Now you understand. Let's go to Richard Boise.
Hello.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, if you remember the 92 election, Jennifer Flowers, the evangelicals, they were all about adultery. That's all about adultery. You don't have any character. You can't be trusted if you cheated on your wife. They were all about their high moral ground and adultery. Well, they sure gave up that position, didn't they? I mean,
I was surprised.
Well, they gave it up in favor of abortion and gay marriage, I think.
Yeah, they
or in opposition to
all their high moral finger pointing, it turned out that the morals didn't have anything to do with it, that they just were voting for somebody they wanted. The LDS in Salt Lake, the LDS in Utah, they didn't do that though. Trump didn't get the majority of the vote in Utah.
The guy from Utah that was running got the majority of the vote.
They stuck to their moral grounds. But the evangelicals, they sold him out as soon as they had a chance. They'll never be able to point their finger at anybody for morals again. Because I mean, they know that. I mean, Trump cheated on his first two wives. We know that for sure. I mean, because he was just running around with them. That was obvious. And so they no longer have a moral ground. To a certain extent
they do. Like in the last election, you had Trump, who basically was anti-gay marriage and anti-abortion, and you had Hillary Clinton. Well, Hillary Clinton was pro-gay marriage and she's pro-choice, and so they didn't want to vote for her. And you know, personalities aside.
Yeah, they're not going to be able to use morals and point at people. They gave that up. They showed they didn't really have any morals. They were just concerned about themselves and other things. So
okay.
I don't think they can be pointing their bony fingers of indignation at anybody else and talking about morals. I think those days are gone for them.
I wouldn't be so quick to say they won't.
Well, yeah. Thanks for the call.
People who like to point will point. You know, at somebody.
They will point. And I think the thing that's coming out today is that when you have two people running for office and you have very strong feelings on certain planks or issues or whatever you want to call them, you're going to go with the people who agree with you.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter.
Well, it's like I said,
who
people,
they were with Saturday night.
I think people tend to vote. I mean, they have two or three core issues that they believe in, as far as politics go.
True.
And, you know, one of them might be immigration. One of them, you know, might be morals, something like that. It doesn't matter. But you will find of those candidates who are running, you will find the politician who at least agrees with that and forgive some of the other stuff when you vote.
True. KBOI News Time, 9:45. We'll be back with Bob of Meridian.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul, Jay, and Chris. More local talk with Nate Shellman is live this afternoon at 3 on 670 KBOI.
9:49 on a Tuesday morning. Paul, Jay, and Chris, joined by Bob of Meridian. Bob, good morning. Good
morning, guys. Okay, you know, it's funny. Rich, who's thoughtful, opened his mouth and once again removed all doubt. you know, he's denigrating the evangelicals for, you know, their stance on, I guess, their religion. Well, if you look at the election, you had Trump, who was accused of doing some bad things to women, but he's for a woman who actually denigrated women for having the audacity to accuse her husband of the same things, and even worse, you know, they included rape in there. And I just don't understand what Rich's point was. I mean, what choices did the evangelicals have? They had a woman who denigrates women but says, oh, I'm all for women. Or they've got Trump, who actually has done a pretty good job, as far as I'm concerned.
What is your number one issue when you vote for a president?
Character. And I didn't see much in either one of them this election. But I just couldn't vote for Hillary because there was so many negatives to her.
She was not a good candidate.
No, I was going to say, did you decide to vote for the one that was the biggest character?
I voted for the one that was the least evil.
Okay. Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Gary of Emmett says, dear Chris and Paul, today President Trump is going to talk about bringing all Americans together. The Democrats will have a rebuttal saying he is trying to divide us. There are advertisements nearly everywhere promoting services that can trace your DNA to find out where your ancestors originated.
True.
Now, having an identity other than American might be interesting, but are these same companies helping people concentrate on what makes them different rather than what makes them the same? Hyphenated citizens, be it German Americans or Chinese Americans or African Americans, are Americans first, or at least that was the plan. Yeah, we're all individuals, but we are, or used to, want to be citizens of the United States, a group that fought two world wars and various conflicts, bleeding blood that mixed on the battlefield with Americans from various backgrounds. It was through that bloodshed freedom was maintained and passed down to us. And let's see, that was Gary. I've got some others here.
One of President Trump's big things tonight is to try to rekindle bipartisan interest in upgrading the country's roads, ports, bridges, and other aging infrastructure. I think this is one of the most important things that needs to be done in the next 5 to 20 years. And it'll be interesting, as your letter just said, how the Democrats receive this and how the Republicans say they're going to pay for it.
Boise rabble-rouser of Boise says, Paul and Chris, let me refresh your memory a bit. Here are some of the promises teleprompter Trump made in his first speech to Congress. Stop the drug epidemic, stop drugs from abroad, build a massive wall for the ages, and shortly heavily fund infrastructure. Repeal Obamacare, work to rebuild the homes of refugees. There were 22 in all, and he has failed most. I suggest pre-medicating before the State of Disunion speech, and am hoping his teleprompter goes down early. Check Colbert's live after show to regain balance. Don't check Fox News. Of course, Colbert would be on CBS.
Yeah.
Bruce of CUNA says, oh, the irony. I am an evangelical and have often been told you shouldn't judge people. Now I hear the same people judging the president and thinking somehow it's different. I shouldn't judge, but they should. I guess to defend the evangelical position, Donald Trump is the most pro-life president in memory. He has taken an actual stand for Israel, not just words but actions. He has put a truly conservative constitutionalist back on the Supreme Court. He doesn't let the liberal news media run roughshod over the top of him. And he took a stand to put Christ back in Christmas. Oh, and one more thing. Our only other option was the epitome of lying, cheating, mistreating women. Says Juanita Broderick. Evangelicals will fight for our country. We are evangelical, not pacifists. Okay. And then Bob says here quickly, Chris, can you imagine how giddy the Democrats would be if it was Hillary who was the president with these exact results in her first year? Of course, with Hillary as president, we would never have achieved what we have. It would be a continuation of the Obama policies, and ISIS would still be lopping off heads and occupy, well, they kind of are, and occupy huge portions of the Middle East. On another thought, if Hillary was president, we would know nothing about the corrupt leaders in the FBI, Department of Justice, etc., and our country would be on the tipping point of its downfall. My belief is that the last election was divinely inspired. I don't think the country makes it past 8 years of Hillary.
Divinely inspired.
The only problem I have with that is those guys in the FBI are all registered Republicans. We'll see you tomorrow.